The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, good snippet this morning from the relationship with Morocco.
Tell me.
The Foreign Ministry Director General Alon Ushbiz is actually in Rabat this week to discuss bilateral issues, including air travel between Israel and Morocco. As we will recall, Morocco is one of those four Arab countries, along with the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain and Sudan, who normalized ties with Israel under the so-called Abraham Accords. And the pace of normalization with the other countries seems to have been a little bit quicker than with Morocco. For example, embassies have been opened and ambassadors have been appointed, not quite so with Morocco. But it does seem as if, though, by the time within the next 3 weeks, apparently, we will already have direct flights between Israel and Morocco. Both El Al and Israel are apparently both planning to open up direct routes, as well as Moroccan airlines. And I think that there's going to be quite a lot of tourist traffic backwards and forwards. Let's not forget that something like 250,000 Jews left Morocco between 1948 and 1964. There are many thousands of Israelis who claim Moroccan ancestry in some way, shape or form. It is expected that there might be as many as 200,000 Israeli visitors in the first year following the resumption, following the instigation of these direct flights. And of course, for Morocco, this is a big windfall. Tourism is a big industry for them, and they've suffered a great deal over the course of the last year. So this is going to be really good news for Morocco. And I think good news for Israelis who have this link to Morocco, many people who wanting to take their children to see where they grew up, to go back on tours of the places that they recall as children, examine some of their roots. So I think this is going to be really good news for those people as well.
Amazing. And I think there's always been quite a lot of interest and travel to Morocco, just not directly. Is that right?
Right. There has been some unofficial, I mean, over time there were some, you know, unofficial links between Israel and Morocco. It's always been kind of under the radar. Mm. And of course, so many people, so many Israelis living here who are interested in returning to Morocco and going back to see where they grew up, where they came from. And now that the direct flights will be initiated within the next few weeks, I'm expecting that the floodgates will potentially really open up, and we expect to see a lot of people traveling backwards and forwards.
Incredible. I'd love to see Morocco. I've never been. President Herzog will be sworn in as Israel's 11th president today.
Yes, yeah, so official ceremony, swearing-in ceremony, there will be that will take place this afternoon. Interestingly, the seventh day of the seventh month, we'll see a new Israeli president sworn in for 7 years. Just a little piece for the significance of the day. So the day will start with the official unveiling of a bust of outgoing President Ruvi Rivlin, which is customary to have a bust of the president in the so-called statue garden of the president's official residence. And apparently the plaque that has been put underneath the bust is a quote from President Rivlin, which goes as follows: "Without the ability to listen, there is no ability to learn. Without the ability to learn, there is no ability to repair." That is the quote from President Rivlin as he leaves office today after his 7-year term has expired. After the unveiling of this particular bust in the garden, there will be an oath of office that President Herzog will take in the Knesset before the formal welcoming ceremony that will take place at the presidential residence, including an IDF guard of honor. And then outgoing President Rivlin will depart the official presidential residence for the final time and will return to civilian life, while incoming President Herzog will take office, and he will take control of the presidential residence, which will also act as his official office in Jerusalem. Yesterday, Buzi Herzog prayed at the Kotel. Let's not forget that his grandfather was Israel's first Ashkenazi chief rabbi. His father was himself also the president of Israel. So he comes from a long line of people who have given service to the state of Israel, other members of his family as well. And this seems to be something which is inherited from him down the line. And he has devoted himself to unity amongst Israelis and true love for Israel. That was contained in the note that he apparently left in the Kotel yesterday when he went to pray before taking office. And so a new era begins late this afternoon, and we will have a new president. I mean, obviously the presidential role is a much more of a ceremonial role rather than something which is an executive role. But it's been interesting to see how President Rivlin has had quite a significant influence over the political sphere. He's had to preside over a great deal of political turmoil, all those elections which didn't result in anything in particular, lots and lots of issues within the government, accusations against the prime minister of the day concerning corruption charges. So he's presided over what's been a fairly tumultuous period in Israel's political history. And he's been a very solid guiding line. He's taken a very firm stand on things, even though he has come from the Likud. Traditionally, that is his leaning, but he's shown himself to be very fair and unbiased towards all political parties, towards all political leanings. And I think he's represented Israel really well, very admirably indeed. He's recently had a trip to the United States, his final act of representing the State of Israel. And he will now, at 81 years old, I guess, going to something of a retirement of sorts, I guess. I mean, who knows whether someone like him can be held down whether he will really go into retirement. Never. But that's officially the way that he'll go.
And I hope he doesn't, because I think that he has so much wisdom and so much to share.
I agree with you. I mean, I think that, to be fair, historically the presidents of Israel have generally shown that wisdom, even though most of them have come from a political party leaning either left or right, you know, in their previous lives. But when they've taken office, let's think about Shimon Peres before him, for example, and indeed others, when they've taken office, they have shown wisdom, they have shown the ability to be very unbiased towards all people and to try somehow to create unity. That's certainly what we could do with right now.
Absolutely right. The law allowing for the deferral of military training for ultra-Orthodox Jews expired yesterday. This is obviously a very contentious one, and probably one of the more significant areas of stress in the in Israeli Knesset. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So this is clearly a very contentious issue. And the last time that this was addressed was in a court ruling in September 2017. The court decided then that the blanket deferral, without any serious effort by the government to increase the numbers of Haredi men and women, I suppose, in military or national service, was considered by the court to be discriminatory and illegal. And as such, the court gave the government until yesterday to come up with new legislation that would be less discriminatory and that would address the issue. The government has been unable to stick to that particular deadline, and hence the court appointed period has expired. The government, I understand, has asked for a further 6-month extension from the court to pass a new law. And the organization that originally brought this action in the court, the Movement for Quality Government in Israel, that's the organization that have originally challenged the government in the court on this issue and was successful. They have said that the court has now turned back to them to ask them if they have any objection to granting an extension. That organization has said quite unequivocally that it opposes any extension, that it will require the government to stick to the court-appointed deadline period of passing a new law. As of today, as things stand today, the government officially, the defense ministry officially, could theoretically call up all Haredi men and indeed women who are of the military going age. In practice, that is very unlikely to happen. The contentious issue about this is that while it would seem fair and equitable for all Haredi men and women to serve in the military or to do some sort of national service in the same way as other citizens of Israel are required to do, the truth of the matter is that because they have their own special requirements and demands, it is quite a burden on the military to accommodate them. There are Haredi units, battalions, Haredim who choose to serve in the army. The army does accommodate their requirements. They have their special food. They have their special arrangements to allow them to do prayers at the appointed times and to have time off when needed and to also have time to study and to have shiurim as part of their military service in order to somehow combine their Haredi lifestyle and the things that they demand as part of their everyday life with their military service. But to say that it's easy on the military would be an inaccurate statement. I think that the accommodation that the military has to make to allow them to serve is quite substantial. And there are people, there are people within the military organization who feel that the price that has to be paid to accommodate them and to create the environment which is comfortable for them is a price that's too high for the military to have to pay, and that the military is probably better off granting them the exemption that they want and not having to accommodate all their special requirements. I am somewhat torn on this issue because I think that to be a real part of Israeli society means to serve either in the military or in a national service role of some sort. Every Israeli citizen has to do it. It is a kind of a one of those things that's part of your upbringing. It, to some degree, determines how things will go for you in your future life, because it so often happens that when you go to a new job or when you meet new people, the first thing that they will ask you is, where did you serve? Which unit were you in? What was your military experience? Who did you know? How can we try to create links between ourselves through the people that we knew in the military? That's part of Israeli society. And I think that the Haredi community, if they ever hope to integrate to some degree within Israeli society, needs also to have that ability to draw those links and to experience those things, and also to have a record of service, because I think it's a very valuable thing for young people in their upbringing to take a few years off and to give something to society without expecting necessarily much in return. I think that there's something to be said in favor of that, and I think that unfortunately our Haredi community lose out on that. While they are studying in a yeshiva, they are theoretically entitled to get a deferral on an annual basis until such time that they are already too old to serve in the military, and therefore it becomes a non-issue. So this is the dilemma.
But that becomes a bit of a trap for them as well, unfortunately, which is definitely adds to the complexity of the Haredi world, because it means not being able to leave the yeshiva, especially if you're not somebody who really even particularly wants to be there for year after year after year. But if you leave, it means you have to go to the army. If that is socially unacceptable within your environment, it means that you're forced to stay in an environment that is not the appropriate one for you, and that leads to all sorts of other consequential
problems.
Issues.
Sure. Yeah. There are many problems within the Haredi community because of the people who are forced to be in yeshivas who really don't belong there for one reason or another, in a good way, don't belong there.
Absolutely.
The army is an alternative for many of them, and many of them do actually want to go to the army. They really do, because they see it as an alternative, something for them to do. The state will find them a suitable job to do while they're in the army. They'll learn skills. They'll meet people.
Absolutely.
There are many good things to be said for going to the army. Unfortunately, their environment, their society doesn't support it, and many of them become excommunicated from the society because they choose to go to the army, which is a very sad statement.
We do need to leave it there. It is 8:01. Anthony Reich, fascinating as always.